Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is you're watching this or listening to this. Welcome to another episode of Final Cut Grill. This is episode 107 with a repeat guest, my good friend Sam Messman. If you haven't heard Sam talk before, he's an extremely passionate guy. He's already been on the grill 4 times. He's even been on an episode of Digital Cinema Cafe where all he talked about was We Make Movies, which is really the guy's main passion. But I tell you, Sam is an amazing evangelist for the platform. He travels all over the world training people how to use Final Cut Pro and doing system integration with the company that he works with called FCP Works. And if you listen to a couple episodes ago with Ben Broadbeck, I want to say it's like episode 104, I believe. There was a discussion in there where we started talking about system integration and training and whatnot. And I you know, it sounded like I was given an ad for FCP Works, but it wasn't. It was just me giving an honest assessment of, you know, what they do and what Sam does. And Sam is an extremely brilliant guy. And in this episode, you know, it's funny, you know, Sam just got back from a vacation and he was like, yeah, man, let's talk. Let's do an episode. And we literally did not plan anything. We chatted for a few minutes before I hit record and we came up with a great topic. And it's something that I've been wanting to learn more about. And as is the case quite often in recording these shows, I learn new things. So it was great talking to Sam, and you're going to enjoy that. Before we get started, please, I implore you, as a favor to me, go support the people at Premium Beat. Go check out their website. Time and time again, I am finding exactly the music that I need. And very editable and very, you know, it's a curated collection of great music. So you're going to sift through, you're not going to be sifting through, you know, thousands and thousands of crap tracks. You're going to get the good stuff. It's a pleasure. And they've been extremely supportive of what we're doing here. And, I tell you, Premium Beat it's absolutely my go-to source for music to cut to. So go check them out at premiumbeat.com. Don't forget, there's the whole blog section with tutorials and whatnot. And it is a destination site on the web. So go check out premiumbeat.com. They also have their new user interface, which it makes it a dream to not only search for music, but I tell you, one of the things that's really cool is as you're checking out, there's a cell where you can actually put like the name of the client or the job number. So it's like for you to keep track of what you're doing. So they've just thought about so many great things. So go check out premiumbeat.com. Let's go now to the interview with Sam Messman, fresh back from his vacation from Mexico, and he's excited about getting back to work. I'm hitting the record button. Hey, so this is I have Sam Messman on the line here, and I gotta warn you. You know, as everybody knows, on a typical show, I hit the record button like before a call, and Sam and I have been chatting for the last like probably what is it now, about 15 minutes. Oh, geez, almost 30 minutes, and so there might be things where we go, wait, did we talk about that? So I apologize. I like to keep it fresh, but we were doing some other business. But so anyway, Sam, welcome to the little podcast.
Oh, well, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be back. Do you want me to give them the long and short of what we were talking about?
Oh, not yet. First of all, I just want to say I got to be like I think I was like the first guest on your show.
You were the first guest on my show for so many reasons that I don't even know where to start. But it was a pleasure. I really appreciated it, man.
You know, as narcissistic as it sounds, I gotta say it was a great show. I listened to it, and there's nothing more narcissistic than listening to a podcast that you're on.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Like I did it.
No, it's not hard. What are you talking about? It's awesome. I love it.
Well, the best is when you can forget that it's you. That means you're not a total moron when you're talking. Is like if you can hit a point where like at a certain point you're like, oh, that's a reasonable point. Oh, wait, I said that. You know,
actually, then it's, the thing that I noticed that drives me crazy is oh my goodness, I wish I could filter that out of my.
That's the other problem is when you dialogue. Listen to yourself and you realize you can't talk, and then you realize it's probably how you sound to most people you talk to.
Well, I was I just did it again. This evening I was talking briefly with Paul Koblick, my boss, And he was saying we had a client showing up late, and he was saying that he recently drove to LA, and during the trip, he found a bunch of the podcasts, both the Grill and also DCC episodes. And he said, "Yeah, I listened to Chris for like 6 hours on the way to LA, which is kind of like a normal day working with Chris."
Yeah, I mean, if you're like you are, if you're like the way you are on the podcast, I don't know how you get anything done or anything actually edited.
There are people that would definitely agree with that assessment. It's like turn around, click, or actually the line that Paul uses all the time, and you hear him from down the hall. You hear him yelling, "Less yapping, more tapping."
Yeah, well, you know, you must be really fast, or either that or you need to like fill out all those hours you're charging for.
No, we get a lot of work done and we're using a very powerful tool. So prior to chatting, you know, basically, Sam, this is, I think, the fourth time you've been on the show. So if people are sick of you, I apologize. But you basically have an open invitation. We always have great conversations. And it was funny. We said, so you want to do an episode? Yeah. And we didn't even discuss what we were going to talk about. But prior to hitting record, you told me a really interesting story that we were talking about learning. Like, what's the best way to learn? And I had told you a story about a woman that I met over the Christmas season. It was at one of our clients' Christmas party. And the executive producer's assistant was chatting with me. And she said, "Yeah, I really want to learn how to edit. You know, do you have any pointers? What should you do?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll tell you the best thing that you can do. If you want to learn how to edit, and you don't know anything about editing, I said, look, you're standing there holding your iPhone for $4.99. Buy the iMovie app from the App Store, okay? And for $4.99, you can just shoot and edit one story a week. Just tell one, and it doesn't have to be epic. It could be like, this is how I brush my teeth. This is how I make a cup of coffee. This is how I pump a tank of gas." Be careful with the whole sparking and everything. But, you know, just tell a story every week. And so then you said, "Yeah, that's how I learned Logic." And I'm like, "Oh, I've been dying to learn Logic." So you said that you have some kind of non-standard views about, you know, using Logic for sound design and stuff. Let's talk about that a little bit.
All right. So here's the deal, right? So I had the backstory to this is way back when, and maybe you're familiar with some of this, is you have lots of people who will tell you that you can't use Logic for sound design, right?
Right.
And for the most part, you will typically believe them. And because you're not a sound designer, right? The right. Sound design is like this mythical thing that you hear about that these geniuses and elves do. It's similar to editing, you know, where like, and magically you send an AAF or an OMF out, and then you get handed back this beautiful mix. And you're like, "How did this happen? I don't know. The elves did it," you know? And all you know is that the elves are really demanding and they want a lot of things from the editor.
Yes.
But you don't – the sound and picture people don't talk very well together. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
You know, I got to say the thing – it's very interesting because when I look at something visually, I think it's because I am – you know, you hear this all the time in this business. Well, I'm a very visual person. So can you describe that to me again? I'm like, really? If you were really visual, you'd understand what I just said.
You're just not listening.
Exactly. And I think that it's easier for me to register visual things. And I think that there's a lot of visual people have a hard time hearing the differences between things. Like, for example, you know, I've had my friend Jeff Dykhouse on the show. I can't remember what episode. He was on several episodes ago. And Jeff is one of these guys that has a magical ear. You know, he's a composer. He does sound design. He does all of the sound effects that you hear on the Grill. Those are things that he and I composed but we created together just via the phone. And so, I mean, seriously, Jeff has a magical ear. I can remember in the days of like DVD players going to the store with him when he'd take headphones, I go, what are you doing? He goes, well, I'm going to buy a DVD player. I go, yeah, it's a DVD player. It's like, takes digital, makes noise out of it. And he goes, yeah, but all digital to analog converters are not the same. I'm like, seriously, you can hear the difference? He goes, oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, good grief. But anyway, so like when you talk to a sound designer, they're hearing things, subtleties and nuances and texture that I think a lot of times we don't register. We hear it when we hear the before and the after, but you can't listen to the before and make that determination of what you need to do to fix it.
Okay, I hear you, except for this. When you mix something in Final Cut and you're like, this sucks, I need to get it to a sound designer, and it comes back and it sounds better, you can tell the difference, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the point. That was the last sentence I said. It's like you hear the difference, but when you're at the start of that journey, you – quite often, we cannot tell what it is that we need to do to get there.
But do you know why that is?
Because we're vidiots, according to Jeff.
Yeah. Well, no. It's because we haven't been trained exactly to fix dialogue. The same way that, like, actually, I feel like, you know, and having been through this process a little bit now, once I framed sound the way that I framed color correction, things started to make a lot more sense to me.
Explain framing. What do you mean?
So when I looked at, you know, in terms of sound, in terms of picture editing, you're dealing with, you know, pieces of things, right? You're dealing with, you know, you're dealing like there's this chunk that I'm going to move here, and then there's this chunk that I'm going to move here, right? Mm-hmm. And stuff can move all around. Everything's got its own, you know, core elements and all of this stuff. However, in color correction and in sound design, you're being handled a finished thing that you're going to improve. So you're not doing editing so much as you're finessing. And like you're taking something and breaking it down to its core elements for the most part and addressing those. Mm-hmm. And in color correction, I come from a colorist background, like editor colorist is my thing. So when I come in and color correct, I have a very specific process that I follow that is going to get me 85% of the way there in terms of getting a shot right. And then from there, you go mess around. But I know where I'm going to start, how I'm going to progress, and I'm going to get boom, 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 boom on down the line and get to, you know, something that's, no matter what I've done, probably going to be significantly improved than what I started with.
Right. So like in a color standpoint, it's like, well, first I'm going to fix overall exposure. I'm going to get adjusted.
So there's a process.
Yes.
There's a basic process that is going to get you 70 to 80% of the way in a way that isn't the case for editing. Editing, you're creating that cut. There's lots of things, like there's a process that's going to allow you to organize things and maybe find some things. But there's not a process for the most part, unless you get a detailed script on how this thing is going to come together. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas with color and audio, you're taking something that's already done and you're improving specific parts of it.
Right.
So on the audio side, if you are trained the basic process for fixing audio, even if you don't have a genius ear, and I'm not going to pretend to, you're not going to see me mixing the next Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. I can take something and mix and get 90% of the way there if it's going to go on the internet and do it myself now because I learned how to make something better on the audio side.
Right.
And what that basic process was. And as I continue to do it more, I'm getting better and better. So in terms of learning and how that applies to what, you know, you were saying earlier with the girl and the phone, you know, the basic thing is like start with something, start it, finish it, and have it be simple and achievable so that it doesn't feel impossible.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly right.
Like a lot of people, like I run We Make Movies, right? And a lot of people want to start with a feature. And I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Take everything that's difficult about making a short film or a commercial and then multiply it by 1,000 and jump in.
If you can't make something that's any good that's 30 seconds long,
right?
how the hell are you going to keep people entertained for 90 minutes?
Exactly.
So start with something small, right? So I remember at a certain point I got this idea in my head. I was like, you know what? I really feel like a big weakness in my arsenal is sound, right? Okay. You know, I know the basics of it. I know what a compressor does. I know what, you know, the basics of EQ and some of these other things, but I don't really know how this stuff works. And I don't really know what I'm supposed to do. And Logic is this audio tool that I have that I already used to check AAFs that I'm going to deliver to a sound designer. Maybe there's actually a way for me to, you know, do some sound editing in there okay. and see how the hell that goes.
So you had the tool for other reasons, and it's just one of those things that's like, yeah, I don't really open it enough.
Yeah, and then you just never learn it. And also there's part of you that like the same thing, well, I'm a picture guy. Like I'm not supposed to know how to do that.
Exactly. That's not my thing.
But like it's really – that's not actually true. I mean anyone can learn the process that can get you 80%, and then it's repetition. And then it's like learning the deeper things and what all the filters do and all this. It's the same thing as editing. It's like it's just you continue to improve your skills. But there's a basic way to approach dialogue. There's a basic way to approach building a mix that
absolutely.
Many people even know in video editing how to do something basic, right? So why is this so impossible for video editors to go the next mile? It's because no one – they don't talk to the people who are doing the sound. They like to keep their own little like silos, you know? And so for me, I was like, well, if I did a podcast, this is the perfect excuse for me to do something simple that I can bang my head against the wall and actually make something that's going to be usable later and then start applying some of that stuff out. And then I ran into some really great tutorials, but I also ran into somebody who was kind of really inspirational in terms of like making me do it in the first place. And I'm actually going to have him on a podcast. He just confirmed with me the other day, and he's a DJ who comes from a music background, right? And okay. he wanted to make a film based around his new album.
Oh, very cool.
So what he did is, well, he's approaching it from the sound. He's like, he's got the album already. So he's going to do this and he's going to make this film and he's just going to do it. And he used Final Cut 10 because he didn't have another tool that made sense to him. And then I got pulled in by somebody down the line to come help him sort it out so he could get back out to Logic. So he could mix in Logic. And he's like, yeah, there's once I'm in Logic, I'm good. And like, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. The reason you say that is because you're a musician. Right. And I'm afraid of Logic because I don't know any better because I just stay in my video editing software. And he's telling me that you can't do things in Final Cut 10 the same way I would probably tell him that I can't do certain things in Logic. And I'm sitting around, I'm like, yeah, no, you just do this, this, and this, and you're good. And he's like, oh, my God. And I'm like, all right, we're going to make a deal. I'm going to show you this, and you're going to show me Logic, and we're going to meet in the middle here.
Hmm.
And then he took the time and walked me through the basics of how to approach dialogue and voice and some of these other things and do some EQ. And it's a really simple process. And then it's just a matter of like getting better, knowing what to listen for. But once you realize what Logic does and you realize what you can do with Extra Pro and an AAF, you're like, oh, I can do all my own mixes now. Hmm. What do I need anything? Like, unless it's like something serious with a major budget, this has completely demystified the process for me.
Okay, so let me ask you a couple of very practical questions because this is Final Cut 10 Grill.
Yeah.
So at what stage I would say 95% of the time, all the audio that I deal with, we do right inside Final Cut. Mm-hmm. At what point do you get to the point where you go, yep, got to go outside?
So when it
what's
comes
that,
down,
what's that tipping point for you?
When you've got a lot of different, when you're dealing with multi-channel audio, it becomes really useful because
you're saying like multi-channel off the cameras.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you have multiple people mic'd up, a lot of different lab mics flying around on different channels that you want to be able to manipulate independently.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask the silly question.
Mm-hmm.
reveal audio components. Why can't I just do that?
Well, here's the thing. Because then
and actually, let me back that off. So I'm just going to give like a little bit of just audio tutorial here for people that don't know. When you select a clip or a file that has audio in Final Cut Pro, in your inspector, which is in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, you have your info, you have your video tab, and your audio tab. Now, when you click that audio tab, you're going to see a few – you're going to see a region for your audio effects, and you'll probably won't have any installed yet. And then you're going to have the audio enhancement section, and there's a volume and pan section. And then below that is the channel configuration. And channel configuration is really, really important. And that's the part where you see a little thumbnail of your audio portion of your clip. And it's really important there because most files will come in. There's a certain amount of logic as stuff comes in. If it's coming from a camera with like four, and good grief, I've seen cameras with eight audio tracks, it seems like. That stuff, it might find it as four stereos. It might find it as four monos. But you can begin to manipulate your audio right there. So like, let's say, for example, you have a four-channel audio camera, but you've only plugged in two mics, maybe a boom and a lav on an interview. Now, it's important to remember that when you import audio or when you import your files into Final Cut, there's actually a checkbox where you can say, if there's no audio on the clip, on the channel, don't bother importing it. And that's actually kind of a cool thing to add because it saves the things you have to mute or deal with here. But then you can actually, you know, mute channels that you don't need right there at the browser level. So every time you bring that clip into your timeline, if you don't need that that channel, it's pre-muted for you. So that's kind of a powerful thing. And then the other thing that you can do is if you right-click on a clip and you say, it's called expand audio components, what it will do is it will break your file. It actually doesn't break it, but it expands it to the point where, like, say your video clip will now have, you will see an audio component for each portion of, for each track of audio. And that's the best way to go in. Let's say I just want to like the host coughed on his lav or cleared his throat, and I want to kill that, right? So I can actually reveal that audio component, go in there, mute that out a bit. And so those are things that are capable inside Final Cut. Now, I'll also say before I let Sam have his microphone back, that you want to be careful when you're messing with these things because there's another item called detach audio. And detach audio at first looks very much like expand audio components or expand audio and video, but it actually separates the link to the video file, which might be okay. But one of the advantages of working in Final Cut 10 is you can keep that stuff linked up more easily. So just be careful when you go to detach audio. So that's the way I deal with audio, like I said, 95% of the time. So back to Sam then. Sam, what are the times when you decide I need to go outside?
So for the record, there's not really much that you're going to do in Logic that you can't do in Final Cut.
Okay. Good to know.
So all of the filters in Final Cut are present or come from Logic, right?
Right.
So the EQ, and then there's certain other things that come really in handy that'll work in both. Like Isotope is like a must own. And there's lots of different things that, like, it's all going to basically work in both programs.
And Isotope is a series of plugins that are very high end, very costly, but I agree.
Well, this is interesting too. So now with the latest version of RX
4, it's called
RX 4. Yeah. It used to be RX 3 Advanced was the one that had the dialogue denoiser.
Yep.
They moved the dialogue denoiser into the regular version of RX, which is like $700-$800 cheaper.
Oh, snap. That's awesome. That's a major, major thing.
And I use the dialogue denoiser pretty much on fucking everything. And it literally is like my make it better button.
It really is. So the dialogue denoiser, I describe it to people like this. Basically, if you have a guy and he's like under a boom and he's in a room and you're doing a little chit chat, whatever. If you had the ability to walk into that room with a bunch of C-stands and a bunch of packing blankets, and you could put one packing blanket behind him and then one sound blanket on the left and right side of the frame, and then make a frame like a 12 by with a bunch of, you know, packing blankets, sound blankets, whatever, and put it right outside of the frame, right, just right above, you know, his forehead or whatever, or, you know, right above the frame. And so he was in like a little box of packing blankets. That's what the dialogue denoiser makes it sound like. It's like, wow, all that noise is gone. Now, it's not going to take away trucks. It's not going to take away, you know.
If your audio sucks, it's still going to suck.
But if it's good, it's going to make it great.
Yeah. And that's literally the best way to describe it. Or if there's a little bit of a hum or some other thing in the background, it's literally, it's just like a make it better button.
Right.
So anyway, that's now part of the RX4 suite.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is a huge for video editors. It makes the purchase pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah, I did not realize they had moved Dialogue Denoiser. That is a huge, huge plus.
So anyway, a little bit beside the point, but you know, what I was saying is that yeah, the tools in Final Cut, there's nothing. It depends on what you need to do, because if you're here's where you save lots of time and logic. You're like, I have a whole bunch of people talking in a scene. They're all in one mic, right? Okay. Instead of having and putting a series of filters and all of this stuff on a single component and then copying and pasting and making sure you've got all of these components managed, right? If you use roles in a certain way, you can get an AAF that's going to shoot all of those individual channels on the components out into a single strip in Logic.
Right.
That you're then going to put all of your stuff on and it's set it and forget it, and you're pretty much good to go and you're on to the next thing.
So essentially what we're talking about, and this is something that actually comes up in the show quite a bit. A lot of people have said that they wish that there was some sort of roles-based filters where I could say, I want to apply a filter to a role as though it were a track. And so until we get something like that, if you can kick all these things out as individual roles into Logic, that's your kind of, you know, workaround. And Frank, well, go ahead.
Yeah, and there and not only that, but there's ways to do it where you're going to get your original media coming in on that thing. So it's not like you're going to kick out the QuickTime as roles, which you can do and will work very well. But you can also, if you use X to Pro correctly, shoot out these components and have it just place the individual pieces of dialogue in sync in a role-based track. But it's only the pieces of the media, and then you have silence in the other places, but it's not just one clip coming in.
That's kind of blowing my mind. Now, is it generating new media or is it referencing the original media?
No, it's referencing your sound. So basically, it's just like an OMF, but it's like you're getting the world's most organized AAF if you set your roles correctly in Final Cut.
Okay, that's kind of blowing my mind. That's very cool. I did not realize you did that. I always thought that the export sort of cha-cha-cha meant that
you know what you're doing.
It's knowledge. That knowledge thing, it eludes me most of the time.
Well, it's just like you don't even know until you need to know.
Sam, is it dynamic?
What do you mean?
Okay, so like I export, I create my roles,
mm-hmm.
and I use what's it called, X to Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes what, like an OMF file?
It's gonna make an AAF that you can import into Logic.
And an AAF is kind of like an OMF, but it's different. It's
on steroids.
A similar type
it's,
thing.
Okay. It's instead of having the 2 gigabyte limit, it's gonna put everything in there, and you can either reference the audio or it'll basically media manage your audio to bring it in certain handle links.
Okay, and so that is a snapshot in time. So let's say I do that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring that into Logic, and then I start laying out my stuff on a track-based system instead of a clip-based system.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get edit notes from the client, and at 3 o'clock, I got to make some changes. I've already.
Here's what you're going to need to do. Okay. You're going to need to save your channel strip settings based on your different tracks.
Okay.
And so then you're going to
redo.
You're going to redo your AAF, and you're basically going to need to reapply your channel strip settings. And this is part of the problem in the sound and picture world, is that it doesn't work the way that Resolve works, where you just bring in a new XML and place it on top of it. That's not how sound works. It's why audio engineers wet their pants every time you're like, well, we just shaved a couple frames off. What's the big deal?
Yeah. It's and, not a bit. I saw a great thing. Have you ever seen, hold on. I gotta look this up because I had never heard of this before. It's called renderplease.com, I think. It's called renderplease.com. And I think they also have a Tumblr account. And it's basically a bunch of GIFs where people have put funny, you know, things that only editors would really understand. One of the guys that was working here today, John Lewis, he pointed this out to me. He goes, you're going to love this. And so one of them says, the guy, it's some clip from a movie, and you can't hear it, but it says, I'm afraid we have a slight apocalypse instead of a slight change. I'm afraid we have a slight apocalypse. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, we've all had it. Yeah, I only want to change one thing, the music. So,
Yeah, and say you move like one piece of dialogue later, they're gonna have to go basically by hand, and they use these things called change lists, and basically there's a whole lot of money for someone, Marquis Broadcast, who makes Xta Pro, to come up with something that does what Resolve does with XMLs, which is basically handling a media pool. And it's just going to read based on your media that's in there, how to lay everything out so that if you have changes, you can quickly add something into a project. That's what I would love to see someday. But that is not how things have been. That is not how the sound industry has been set up. So it's still the similar situation of like there's ways to get around it, but it's a pain in the ass. It is dynamic in the sense that you can just restart up a new Logic project and you can slap your channel strip settings that you've already done, your EQs and compressors and all that stuff, and you can place those on there. But it's a similar mix thing, which is why, Chris, long-term, this should all just happen in Final Cut. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Because and I want the same for color, because what I'm finding more and more is that I'm tired of going to these goddamn applications. It doesn't save me time. The amount of time I save in some of these applications by going to them is lost by my conform back and forth.
Right.
So if I just had a couple of the tools that you have in Logic or I have in Resolve, and those were present inside Final Cut, I would never need to leave.
Right. I totally agree. Hey, so along the lines of what you're talking about here, I also want to point out that Philip Hodgetts has made a couple of utilities that are actually very useful. One of them is called ChangeList X.
Oh, yeah.
And ChangeList allows you to take an XML from like version 5 and an XML from version 6, and it will kick out a change list, and it'll show all the things that are different. And that's like a hugely useful thing if
except
you're the type
that it's still a manual process.
Oh, it's
so stupid. This is 2015. No.
It's very manual, but thanks to Philip, we actually do have something like that.
Yes.
And then the other thing is a producer's best friend that does a lot of this type of stuff in terms of like keeping track of things and making spreadsheets of all of the clips that are being used and whatnot. So,
and I love, thank God for intelligent assistants. I don't want that to take what I just said as a knock on them. It is not. It is this industry that thinks that that's a good way to do things.
Well, yeah, you know, let's face it. There's a lot of things wrong with this industry, but you know, let's face it. I mean, Philip has been a giant friend of Final Cut 10 from the very beginning.
Oh yeah.
You know, I remember when he started going on and on about AV Foundation and you know, metadata this. I was like, Philip, give it a break. And now here I am, you know, with 107 episodes of basically things that Philip Hodgetts was saying years ago.
No, so, he's one of those people who is so smart.
Yeah, it's scary.
That just isn't appreciated. And he's just so far ahead of us that, like, it's you don't even appreciate it. Like, you appreciate, you know, something a few years later and like, oh, that's what he was talking about.
He's not crazy. He's from the future.
Yeah. I mean, it's talk about a, like, you know, those tools are just things that, like, those guys, like, turned out because that's what the industry needed. I don't think those are his most even remotely his most innovative things. They're just necessary. The thing that's really innovative that no one is really using out there because they haven't grasped it fully is Lumberjack.
Right.
And you want to talk about something that, like, should be a no-brainer, but, like, I have to sit there and show people and, like, they're like, oh, that's amazing. And then they go off about their business and don't use it,
right?
You know? And the reason for that is because it hasn't really clicked for them how much time it really saves. And it's such a breakthrough. And I think part of it is because I don't think they've messaged it right. And I don't think they've messaged it to the right industries. And that thing should be blowing up college sports.
Right. And I also want to point out that Philip has been on the show. He was on episode 71. So if you want to go back, I think, as I recall, he went on to a whole big, long discussion about Lumberjack. So episode 71 of the show.
It is. Anyway, I'm thinking the rest of the world's going to catch up with him over the next couple of years.
It's possible, but he's got a huge head start.
Yeah. So, or at least is going to be ready to start really taking advantage of hopefully some of the things he's built, because he can save your average college hundreds of thousands of dollars because that's how much they pay this other company to come do the stuff that his software does much better.
Wow. Very cool. All right. So back to our little project of taking a timeline. We make our roles proper. And, you know, to be clear, the roles is something that you can set either in the browser, if you fit, which is the smart place.
Now, what
place
you're
going to
do, though, Chris, this is important, is you're going to need, if you're dealing with something that has like five microphones or five lab mics on it, right? Okay. You're going to need to expand out the components and a couple strategies, right? Because usually your sound, this is where, like, if you have an integrated approach to workflow, you can make this really easy on yourself. Very few people do, though. But you could have your sound designer label all of your individual components according to who's talking, right?
Okay.
And then all you would need to do is shift select all of your clips in your timeline, expand audio components, and you can just shift select across all of these different clips based on the names of the components and assign a role to each one of those.
So you can actually assign a role to one component in the clip.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay. And so you'd have, like, the Bob role and the Cindy role.
You'd be assigning sub-roles. So it'd be a sub-role within dialogue. Is.
I got it. Yeah, I've heard I remember Michael Matzdorf was talking about sub-roles.
Oh, yeah. Mike and I, we – you'll feel more about that
I played it off like I knew what he was talking about. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, totally, sub-roles. I have no idea what he meant.
No, Mike and I have been down the rabbit hole on that one. And there's more that I'd like to see Final Cut do with sub roles. I mean, some of it isn't very elegant at this point,
right?
But it does enough where you can do what you need to do. And what it's going to do is it's going to send out, if you send out an XML, that's going to come into X2Pro. X2Pro is going to allow you to arrange the sub roles so that it comes into Logic or Pro Tools as tracks based on your components that you assign to each individual subrole.
Okay.
So you can have literally the world's most OCD. Michael Garber did a fantastic video on this too, way back when. Wonder whatever happened to him.
I don't know. I miss Michael Garber.
Yeah. Mike, if you're listening, hi.
Keep up the good work, Mike.
So anyway,
Inside Baseball with Chris Fenwick and Sam Esmond.
Anyway, he did a fantastic video back when he did that sort of thing. And basically illustrating this whole process. You can still find it somewhere. Go to Garber Shop. And it illustrates what's going to happen in Logic. Now, he never did any sound design in Logic. But it turns out it's a very capable sound editor.
Right.
And but what you can do is have the world's literally most OCD AAF come in based on components and have all of your similar types of audio basically get laid out on a single track in Logic, named after the role that you named it. So named after a character. And then you just go and you put all of the EQ and compression and noise reduction and, you know, any filters you want to put on it, you're going to put it on each of those channel strips or tracks.
Yeah.
And you're pretty much good to go. And then you're gonna use automation to affect your levels, and you know, you put some crossfades in, and that's a mix.
So I want to point out one of the reasons why this is better than setting your filters in Final Cut and then pasting it across all, you know, selecting all and then paste the attribute across. And there's a couple of reasons why this is better. First of all, currently, and we're recording this when 10.1.4 is the current version. Currently, we are still missing a very important feature that I wish Apple would give us back, and that would be remove attributes. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to paste a bunch of attributes onto a bunch of clips, and it's very hard to get them off once you've pasted them on. We mm-hmm. used to have it in Final Cut 7. I think we really need to get that back. So that's one reason. So like you could say, oh yeah, I'm going to EQ, you know, Sam's voice here and make him sound more awesome. And then I do that and I paste it across all the clips. And then, you know, the note comes back from the client. They're like, yeah, Sam sounds a little fake and bassy. And I'm like, yeah, but I was trying to make him sound awesome. And they're like, yeah, too much.
Well, and hey, not only that, but you've also got to go through and select all of those SAM components.
Right, exactly. So I'm not even touching that. You're totally right about that. But now here's another subtle thing that you may have come across, and if you haven't yet, you probably will at some point. So a lot of times what we're doing is we're doing various types of compression or noise reduction. And a lot of times that compression is triggering off of the actual footage that is in the clip, okay? So it's listening to the audio level, it has a threshold set, and it's doing certain stuff to that clip based on that threshold. I remember the first time this happened to me, and I didn't catch it, and it was really embarrassing. So I had copied an attribute, and I pasted it across all of the selected components. But the problem was there was one short little clip that was completely innocuous where Sam actually wasn't speaking at all for about 2 or 3 seconds, but it was its own clip. It wasn't mm-hmm. part of a larger clip where there was already threshold set, there was speaking set, and so it was compressing a certain way. But it was a 3-second clip where there was no voice. And so what it was trying to do was to auto gain that little section up. And because there was actually no and I'm probably getting this wrong. Maybe it wasn't compression that I was doing, but I had applied a setting to a passage of audio that had no dialogue. And so for this short, there was this massive, like ear shattering, just background noise.
Yeah.
Okay. And so like that would not have happened had there been some audio in that clip. And it's a simple thing. It's really mm-hmm. easy to miss something like that.
And it would never happen in a dedicated digital audio workstation.
It would not, because you're dealing with things at the track level and not the clip level.
And so, and that is the biggest, that is literally the major difference why video editors don't know how to edit sound.
Right.
Is video editors approach things based on the clip level. Audio editors approach things on the track level.
Right.
And both processes are valid, but it was the hardest thing. I thought Logic sucked initially, the same way a lot of people think Final Cut 10 sucks with the magnetic timeline, because I'm trying to use it the way I use Final Cut 10, and that's not how it's designed to work.
Right. Right.
And it's a similar thing. And here's I'm going to unravel another mystery that had plagued me forever until I like had this like, you know, I have invented, I will show you the wheel, you know, and like I have reinvented it. And basically this had plagued me trying to figure out how these sound designers do the echo, because I would throw the echo filter on a clip.
But
like,
as soon as the clip is over,
yeah, you can't get the echo.
You don't
because
get the long
no
tail
more
on
space
it.
On the clip. And then you extend out the clip and you bring down the automation and it doesn't work.
Right.
Because you brought down, you know, you use keyframes and then there's no audio. So how the hell did they do that? Did they make a nest or what did they do? You know,
they're doing it on a track, not on a clip.
And that's it. It's on a track.
Yep.
And it's that type of thing. And it's just because video and audio editors work differently. But I think what's been the most interesting thing for me is now that I had someone take the time to show me, and then I found some really good tutorials that filled in a lot of the technical blanks for me. Mac Pro Video, by the way, if you want to learn Logic, get a couple months membership or you know, download some of the tutorials. They've got like 9 million of them dedicated to basic things. But if you just pay for the monthly, you can watch them all until you get tired of it. Mm-hmm. And they're great. And if you have someone else kind of show you some of the stuff, like once it clicks for you, then you're like, oh, what was I so afraid of? You know, and then you can look at it with like, and start really evaluating what you're doing and start getting better.
So, yeah, I'm looking at the Mac Pro Video site here. So if you just search for Logic, there's Logic Pro X 100, 101, 102, 103, 104. Doesn't look like there's anything specifically for video, is there?
Not as much, but it's not important. You don't need it.
Okay.
And by the way, Linda, believe it or not, has an old Logic tutorial because I've been down the – because here's the thing. If you already know how to edit video, you're going to understand how you want to approach your mix.
Right.
But what you're not going to understand is how to use the tools in Logic, you know, to do some of the – like how to use Logic. You're just not going to know.
Right.
Because there 102, I think, is signal flow. And that one's really important because that explains how a mixing board works, which – to be honest, I didn't know.
Oh, and, Sam.
Yeah, well, you know, I could talk to you all day about nodes and color correction and all that other stuff. But like, what does a mixing board do? I know you push faders, but like, I don't know how I didn't know how the signal feeds and in what order it went down and around and back up and out to the outputs and all that. You know, I didn't know.
Cool.
So anyway, it's been kind of like I feel like I broke down the final frontier or something for myself just by like deciding that I wanted to do a podcast, you know, and that's kind of what I'm talking about, is like just wanting to do something small and achievable to teach myself a new program and go down the rabbit hole and like something that wasn't critical and I wasn't going to have a huge deadline for.
Right.
And just allow myself to like figure it out. And that's how you learn and you get better. If you have a deadline and you need to learn something, it's not going to go well.
Hey, so one last thing not one last thing, but another thing I want to ask you, are you actually using Logic to record your podcasts or are you still recording in the,
call recorder,
Skype call recorder?
What I am doing is I'm bringing that into Logic and it splits out into split track audio.
Does Logic do that for you?
Yeah.
Oh, gee. Okay, so can you do me a favor? Would you be willing to do Chris Fenwick and therefore the whole show a favor?
Yeah.
Would you do, because I know you know ScreenFlow, you use the ScreenFlow. Would you do like a 2-minute, here's my file coming out of call recorder, I bring it in, I click on this, 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 and this, and now I'm ready to make my show. I feel stupid saying this, but I've tried this. I've spent probably a total of maybe an hour and a half over the last couple months just going, I don't get it. I couldn't figure out at the most basic level. Would you make that video for me?
Yes, I will do that, especially because you told me about call recorder in the first place.
Call Recorder is pretty magical, I will say.
The only thing that I'm going to need from you is a couple reminders to sit down and actually do it. But I promise you I will do it.
Okay, cool.
So once follow up with me and you're like, you said you were going to do this for me. And I'll be like, I did say that. Okay, I'm going to do it now. And that's how it's going to go.
That's funny. Yeah, that's great. So you're doing the podcast and you're actually doing you have a fair amount of production value on your show, certainly a lot more than I do. You have a little intro-y thing and some music and bits and bobs, yeah?
Yeah, that was an accident, and that's a loop from Logic that I threw in under my girlfriend's voice.
I was wondering whose voice that was. It's cute. It's like, you know, if you're offended by stuff, you should probably be listening to something else.
I don't know. Like, for me, this was just like an experiment. I just was like, I was just trying things. And that's how I do anything. I mean, the other thing is like, I have the luxury now where like I get to edit for free and I only edit the things I like, you know, cause a lot of what I do informs what I do for clients, you know? So this is one of those things where I just get to kind of go play and test things and see what works and what doesn't. And it's the same thing with the We Make Movie stuff. So I did the podcast and then I was like, oh, well, we have this sketch show and I don't have a deadline on that. So I'm going to now take a sketch and I'm going to mix a sketch in Logic and see how that goes. And I was like, oh, this went really well. Hmm. And then we did our Patreon video for We Make Movies, and I mixed that in Logic, and it sounded way better than it would have sounded had I done it normally. And I was like, okay, I'm onto something here. This isn't and it's like it's demystifying the idea that you can only mix in Pro Tools or any of this other stuff. It's a pretty straightforward workflow. There's a lot of stuff that I would do to improve it, but I would also improve it in Pro Tools as well. It's just as messed up in the Pro Tools world. So, you know, it's a great program. It's significantly cheaper. And it's also an Apple product, which means that it's probably going to make a little more sense to your brain than Pro Tools is going to make. Because I tried learning Pro Tools multiple times and it was an epic disaster and I gave up. And so the point is, when people tell you that you can't use Logic, just know that lots of people say that about Final Cut 10 as well, that you can't use Final Cut 10 for certain things, and they're wrong about that too.
So tell me a little bit, and I know that We Make Movies is a huge passion for you. I want to give you a couple minutes here. So you mentioned this Patreon thing. First of all, I had not heard of Patreon until like a month ago.
Oh, dude, it's amazing.
So tell me what Patreon is, and tell me how We Make Movies is using it. What are you doing?
Well, basically, so here's the problem with Kickstarter, right? Is that people can only give for one thing, and then you only really get to make one thing. There's no way to get recurring revenue.
Oh, I get it. So Patreon allows you to pledge over time.
Or do a monthly pledge. So you can basically do your own subscriber-based system.
Oh, okay. I totally get, you know what? This makes perfect sense now. And now I see the big giant orange button that says become a patron, give $3 per month.
There you go. Okay.
Oh, okay. So, and is this what you're doing in terms of helping fund what We Make Movies is doing?
So this has allowed us to be, as far as I'm aware, become the world's first community-funded production company.
That's cool.
Like literally our members are our community and it's their money. They're allowing us to keep the lights on and do our weekly events. But also now that our membership have paid for making sure that our lights stay on for all of our weekly events, like that's already, we've already hit those goals 3 months ahead of when we thought we would. It took less than a month and we already hit all of our milestones.
That's awesome.
We're now into this rollover thing. We call this rollover funds, where like all money that comes in from members on Patreon that goes over our last workshop goal. Mm-hmm. And this is a monthly thing, which we set that to $1,600 a month. All the money that goes in over that goes into a community production fund, where basically the members of We Make Movies are going to get to decide whether we're going to put that money into a community funded short pilot feature if they want to, depending on how much money comes in, you know, and where that money's going to go. And we're going to hold a contest that's members only, where the community is going to decide what we go make, you know?
Very cool.
And it's all going to be like, you're not going to have to go through all of the fundraising and all this other stuff. And we're building a distribution platform around what we're doing so that, because that's a whole other thing. You should listen to next week's podcast where I talk to the CEO from Yekra that's coming out Friday or Monday about what creators should be doing on the distribution side of things, where they can incentivize actors or people that have the audience you're trying to reach. For instance, Final Cut users, where you can incentivize, I guess, Malcolm Gladwell's connectors to promote your movie. And there's a really smart affiliate system built around it. So the bottom line is what we're trying to do with We Make Movies is create a place where filmmakers can come. And if the work is good, build an audience around it and distribute it and actually profit from it, as opposed to, you know, what the regular industry does, which is basically rape filmmakers.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. We'll have that discussion offline too. And then the last thing I want to ask you about, we're recording this on January 12th, this year, 2015, and we're just a couple of months away from NAB. What are you and what is FCP Works? What do you guys have in store for everybody at NAB?
Well, Chris, funny you should mention that.
If that's not a setup, I've never heard one.
Well, hopefully we're going to have some further announcements about that involving a certain podcast host. But that negotiation still remains
Leo
to be seen.
Leo is pretty busy. I don't know that he's got a lot of spare time.
Well, we may have to look for someone else then, Chris. Let me know if you have any ideas. But what we're going to try and do at NAB this year is change the way people interact with workflow and vendors. You know, if you've been to the show, so you know what this is, which is basically you have 9 million vendors who are all trying to say, hey, look at me, look at my product. It does this thing and it's better than all the other products, but I'm not going to show you anyone else's product at my booth.
Right.
And I'm not going to have a platform for that to show how this integrates in a larger picture workflow, you know?
It's very rare that you find people that even want to acknowledge that there's any other technology in their booth. You know, I remember, you know, when I met you, it was almost two years ago now, and it was at NAB, whatever it was, 2012, whatever, mm-hmm. 13, I don't know. And I was walking through one of the back halls, and you were there working with a drive vendor, I think it was.
Acusys. I was at the Acusys booth.
Right. And so I walked by, and I looked over, and I'm like, hey.
What the hell is that?
That's Final Cut 10 on that display. And I was like, I want to talk to this guy. And I walked up to you, and I think we talked there for like 45 minutes or an hour. And you were like peeling the walls back on your booth to show me like stuff and hardware that was inside, you know, kind of the backstage, if you will, of your booth. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. This guy knows his stuff. So anyway, no, you're right. Very few people want to discuss integration because it might mean you have to talk about either A, somebody else's product, or B, possibly shortcomings in your own product.
Yeah, or, you know, it's just all about, well, these are my marketing talking points. I'm going to tell these over and over and over again, and I'm going to tell you that my thing is the greatest, whether it's the greatest or not. I know I have to sell this many things, and we paid this amount of money for the booth, and I need this to be worth my while. So you're at my booth, so I can only talk about my thing. And we're less interested in that. We're more interested in creating I'm not going to get into the whole format, but let's just say we're going to have all kinds of things set up where people can come in and they're interested in a topic and they're interested in how certain things fit together across the thing or what certain types of people are approaching. And we're going to make it easy for people with certain interests to come in and maybe get a sense of solutions that are going to be right for them in a comprehensive sense, as opposed to 9 million booths where you're overwhelmed by the paralysis of choice.
Right. Now, can you mention where you're going to be?
We are going to be adjacent to the show floor. So we were at the Wynn last year. We're going to be significantly closer this year.
So the Wynn Hotel is really beautiful and it's really wonderful. And I got to say it. I mean, I got to go to your suite. I got the invite, and it's kind of a little bit elitist because you actually have to leave the convention center and like take a shuttle and ugh.
But you know what the hardest part about it is the people, if you have to set up the shuttle to get the people over there, trust me, it's not fun.
Oh, really?
Coordinating like, oh, you're people with this giant convention. Okay, find this one car that's going to shuttle you over.
Yeah, good point.
It's hard. We're fixing that this year.
So you're going to be at, what's the name of the place you're going to be at?
Well, I guess I don't think it needs to be a surprise. I'm fairly certain it's official. We should be over at the Renaissance this year. There's going to be a lot more info coming about this. And there's going to be a lot more stuff for me to talk about on this side of things. But let's just say that if you were at the suite last year, we thought we did some interesting things. But we're going to completely change our approach this year and I think try and target something that, you know, regardless of what you're doing, there's going to be something for you at a given time in a suite and you're going to know a good time for you to come in advance.
Very cool. So, yeah, I mean, I think it sounds very cool. And the Renaissance is just – I think it's just to the south of the convention center, but literally it's a walk. You walk across a driveway.
It's just like going to another building. It's like, you know, if you're going to go to the North Hall or you're going to go to the South Hall or you go to the Renaissance, it's the same type of thing, right? Choice.
And so that's really significant because of the whole shuttle thing. And I went to somebody else's booth there last year. I was with Alex McLean from Digital Cinema Cafe and he was, I can't remember. I think it was like, it was one of the big color grading companies. I can't remember who it was, but it was actually very nice and it was close. And you take the normal shuttle. And so I think that's an awesome location to be in. And I think it's cool. You get to be there.
So, yeah. And you know, there's, we are still finalizing some things as always, things are subject to change, but we've got a really good game plan. We're hoping, that we'll be able to make some other announcements about certain participants relatively soon. And
what Sam is talking about is he has asked if I would be willing to participate. And I said, yeah, let's talk about the money. And, you know, I'm not the cheapest guy. Whatever.
I get one offer for Chris and we'll see whether he says yay or nay. And, you know. We're going to see what happens. So, listeners, stay tuned. If I stop talking to Chris, you'll know why. No, that won't be the case. Whether you do or not, I mean, this is always fun, man.
Well, I got to say, it sounds really exciting, and I hope we can make it work out. So, well, that's awesome, Sam. If people want to find – you're involved in a lot of different stuff. How do we find Sam Messman? How do we find We Make Movies? How do we find the Patreon thing?
Here's the long and short of it.
First of all, Patreon, let me just say, first of all, Patreon is already in the show notes. I actually found that. So that's going to be in the show notes. But how do we follow Sam and We Make Movies and FCP Works online?
Well, number one, if this is FCPX Grill, so if you're interested in Final Cut workflow, come check us out at fcpworks.com. And then if you want to see or hear anything I have to say, click on blog, and that's – you're going to see a whole bunch of stuff. Whatever I've got going on is going to be in there. There's a whole giant list of random stuff for you to look at. If you're interested in the We Make Movies side of things, go to wemakemovies.org. Do not go to .com. .com is not us, and you will be disappointed.
Yeah,
go to
it's like a website org. From like 1978 or something.
I don't know what's going on there. It's crazy. But wemakemovies.org, and that is my Los Angeles and Canada-based film collective. perspective, and we're trying to change the way movies get made. Come check us out over there. We got all kinds of free filmmaking resources and really cool stuff. And if you're interested and you're in the LA area and you think you maybe want to become a member, we're going to have some digital stuff longer term. But if you're interested in, and you want some a live community experience, go to wemakemovies.org and click on the thing that says go to our Patreon thing or whatever, or just go to patreon.com/wemakemovies and you'll see exactly what it is that we have going on. And you know, otherwise, I'm at FCP Works or at Sam Mestman or at We Make Movies with a Z on Twitter, because the S was taken. But thanks, Chris, and hopefully I'll be able to get you back on
Sam's kind of new to this whole podcasting thing. He hasn't learned that he should mention that too.
But the podcast
is Film Central. And if you search for Film Central on the iTunes,
it's We Make Movies Film Central. And the first guest, there's one episode at the moment that's going to change. It's going to be weekly. I've got, as I mentioned, the guy from Yucker coming up this week, and then Alex 4D is going to be really interesting. So for you guys up there, that's in 2 weeks. Check back for Alex 4D. It is We Make Movies Film Central on iTunes. And if you are interested in whether or not you should pursue a career in freelance editing, that's pretty much all Chris and I talk about for an hour.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So this Alex Gollner, you say, or Alex 4D, who is that?
Exactly. I think now we're tied for number of podcasts.
You and I, the two of you are pretty prolific on this show, but you're also, you know, huge minds in the business. So thanks again for being here. And I don't even know if I need to sit, but I'm sure we'll do it again sometime. Okay, Sam?
We'll just, which podcast is it going to be, man?
Is it? We'll just, I think just once a week we should get together and chat and post it. It'll be the Chris and Sam show.
We'll call that the self-indulgent podcast.
Yeah. It's great. All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks, man.
So that was kind of funny at the end there. Sam actually was forgetting to promote his new podcast. He'll learn. I don't open my mouth without mentioning Final Cut Grill and Digital Cinema Cafe. Anyway, so I will tell you that after the recording, we talked for a fair amount of time, and we haven't negotiated, all of the details, money wise and compensation, but. There is a very good chance I will be a part of what FCP Works is doing at NAB this year. We don't know exactly what it is, but Sam was really enthusiastic, and I think that I think there's a good chance we're going to see a connection there. And I will tell you that the location that they're going to be at this year, I can't remember the name of the hotel, but it's like across the driveway from the LVCC. Now, not where the old Hilton used to be, which is now called something else, but I believe it's the south end, so like to the south. Anyway, looking forward to that, and we'll see. I got to talk with the people in the office at FCP Works. That's Noah. Anyway, excited about that. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Grill. And as always, go to iTunes, leave the comments, give the show stars. It helps other people find it. And if you have a topic that you think I should be covering, by all means, let me know. And if you have a guest that you think should be on the show, hook me up. You can do that. The best way to do it is through Twitter, through a direct message or just mention. And I guess it's called a mention on Twitter. I always see those things. And if you want, you can email me at the show email address, which is chris@digitalcinemacafe.com. So thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Later.